Welcome to Mind the Gap.
Here's what we do. We will set up. This is Tunnel Vision.
From planet to planet. Solar system to solar system. From galaxy to galaxy.
We switch you to Earth.
Service message from way out. We care about your world.
Okay. Do you like my levels? Are my levels good?
Stay tuned.
Welcome to Mind the Gap. This is Jason Vass with
Gus Castanis.
Dude, you sound good.
I do.
You do. Well, welcome to Mind the Gap. Happy New Year, all. This is Happy New Year. January 1st, 2017. This is our first show for the new year. And as usual, we open with React by Jurassic 5.
Jurassic 5, we love the 5.
We do. And, you know, our show, if you don't know us, if you're listening for the first time, is sort of a little bit of this and that, smorgasbord, but mostly we talk about art and we play a little music. And the last show we did, the December 2016 show, we touched on a series of articles that we both like called Social Cues by Philip Galanes, and he writes for the New York Times. So we're going to do some of those, some other stuff as a sort of beginning show for 2017. So I guess we'll just jump into it with some art news. And it's not going to be too much, but here it is. So this is a partnership that has been formed of for a new gallery, or it's a new iteration of a gallery already in New York, Dominic Levy. But Brett Gorvey leaves Christie's to partner with Dominic Levy. And as this article states, the pair will form a formidable new art-dealing duo. So here we are. It's written by Eileen Kinsella. I got this from ArtNet News, and it's actually dated December 7th. So I'm giving a little bit of old news, but I didn't touch on it in December, and I've decided to share with you now.
Well, that's fine.
Okay. I felt like you were inside my head.
Sorry about that.
No problem. In what will undoubtedly contribute to the formation of one of the newest and most prominent power art dealer duos, news that Brett Gorvey, Christie's longtime chairman and international head of post-war and contemporary art, is leaving the auction house after 23 years to partner with Dominic Levy, one of the top contemporary art dealers in the world. The new partnership will be called Levy-Gorvey. Gorvey is the latest in a string of senior auction house executives who departed major houses, a development that has affected Sotheby's, Christie's, and Phillips in order to venture out on their own as private dealers. This list includes Guy Bennett, Nicholas McLean, and Christopher Eklund, Stephanie Cosman-Connery, and Thomas Seydoux, to name just a few. The news caps a year of huge turnover at the major auction houses, with Sotheby's having seen an exodus of talent amid a management shakeup alongside the $50 million acquisition of Art Agency Partners, that latter of which was co-founded by Gorvey's former worldwide co-head of post-war and contemporary art at Christie's, Amy Capelazzo. One source we spoke to called the duo formidable. For years, Gorvey has been at the forefront of Christie's dominance in the contemporary art world, overseeing major auctions that reached into the hundreds of millions of dollars, including a sale that made upwards of $600 million. In a release issued by Christie's London office, the auction house emphasized that it will continue to work with Gorvey going forward. It acknowledged Gorvey's role in having successfully established a deep bench of specialists expertise in the post-war and contemporary art category at Christie's. At the international level, the department will continue to be led globally by Laura Paulson, Francis Outred, Mariolina Bassetti, and Luik Gozer, along with Barrett White, Sarah Friedlander, Andy Massad, at Koji Inoue in New York, Xin Li and Eric Chang in Asia, and Edmund Francis in London. As previously announced, Alex Rotter will join the department in the Americas in 2017, having left Sotheby's in early 2016. So thought I'd share that because it's big news. He was the head of the major department in Christie's, and he's gone private with Dominic Levy, who's a very important dealer. If you remember, Dominic Levy was the L in L&M gallery here in New York and had a gallery here in Venice in a terrific building on Venice Boulevard right off Abbot Kinney, L&M Fine Arts, and they built a really terrific space, which I think is sitting empty and no one's actually bought it or occupied it. And I could be wrong. I haven't been there in a while. But
wow.
So they were here, and she was here in L.A., but no longer. All right. So now, just as sort of wrapping up some old news.
Old news.
From last year. There's another one. A couple of old pieces of news. This one is Ai Weiwei. I don't know if I talked about this already. Ai Weiwei joins call for President Obama to pardon Edward Snowden. Do you remember me talking about that?
Well, I don't think it got to Trump.
Well, this is actually also from December 2016, and he's quoted as saying, as an artist, free speech is essential to my work. Artist Ai Weiwei has added his voice to the call for U.S. President Barack Obama to pardon National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden before he leaves office, which will now be in 20 days.
Oh, I thought it was Trump.
No, Ai Weiwei joins call for President Obama, but he's not president. You know, Obama's still the president for 20 more days, and then Trump is sworn in on the 20th of January.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah, yeah. So Obama can still pardon him. I don't know if it's going to happen, but a lot of people have rallied around this. So
isn't Snowden in Russia?
He is.
And isn't Trump's ally Russian?
Well, he has seemingly some sort of relationship with Putin, but we don't know. You know, Putin is kind of happy to be sheltering Snowden for some reason. There's a relationship there. I don't believe that Snowden's probably ever met him, but what do I know? I just think that for some reason, Putin likes having the burr that Snowden is in Russia. I mean, he's sheltering him. I don't know what's going to happen there because if we got hold of him, the idea is that we'd probably put him in jail for 50 years.
Yeah, it's nice. Pugger is fun.
So let me read this and we can talk. The request is part of Amnesty International's annual Right for Rights campaign. That's WRITE for Rights campaign, where each December the nonprofit asks the public to speak out against human rights violations worldwide. This year's list includes 11 causes, from an Egyptian photojournalist who is currently on trial after photographing police violence, political activists in Iran working to help Kurdish women, as well as two young men who've been imprisoned in Azerbaijan for taking a statue. You know, I did share this article. Now that I'm reading it, I'm pretty sure we read this already, but it's important to me. And I really think that Snowden, as you know, he was my man of the decade, and I think he should be pardoned. So he's been in exile in Russia since 2013. It's already three, now going into 4 years, that he was given asylum there since fleeing the U.S. And I think Obama should do it. I don't know if he is.
He won't.
Well, he's been doing some interesting stuff.
So. Yeah, but it's just not. It's not going to settle well with the party. I mean, without a doubt, I mean, there's truth and then there's truth, and that should happen, but that's not going to happen. Let's go.
Son of punk legends sets fire to millions of dollars of memorabilia.
Punk legend sons.
Yeah, Joe Corey set fire to punk history to protest commodification, nostalgia, and climate change. More than $6 million worth of punk memorabilia went up in flames on, this was in late November. a statement against the nostalgia of 2016, a statement against the nostalgia and commodification of punk on the 40th anniversary of the Sex Pistols. Never mind the bollocks, here's the Sex Pistols. Firefighters looked on as a barge floating on the Thames River in London was set ablaze by George Corey, the son of the late Malcolm McLaren, Sex Pistols fame, and fashion designer Vivian Westwood. Corey and Westwood both spoke to crowds, the former from the boat packed with Corey's collection of ephemera, and the latter from a bus sporting a banner advertising climateevolution.co.uk. The activist mother and son duo both spoke of the urgency of ethical consumption and saving the environment, besides Corey emphasizing his motives. Quote, "Welcome to the great punk rock swindle, time when you can buy McDonald's punky nuggets and Anarchy in the UK credit card at 19% APR, punk rock car insurance, and bondage trousers from Louis Vuitton. And London is being socially cleansed and turned into a theme park," he said. The entire event was live streamed online, and a YouTube account with the name Burn Punk London has uploaded a 26-video playlist of Corey's and Westwood's speeches and clips of individual ephemera on fire. Corey's method of protesting the contemporary commodification of punk has been met with questions of why he couldn't sell his archive instead and donate the money to charity. On an Instagram post, commenters called the action pathetic, a waste, capricious, and middle class, quite castrated, in fact, and so fucking lame. Others praised the bonfire, one user with a thumbs up emoji, another with a comment, "Bravo, if you can't understand this, you'll never understand punk." Twitter user Matt J. Hartley said to Corey on Sunday, quote, "If you can somehow turn this into a good thing, I will be astonished," to which Corey replied, "Something good will come out of this." In other replies, he made mentions of a documentary, and indeed, cameramen filming from different angles can be seen in the YouTube videos. Time will tell, quote, "if something good is," unquote, is more than an attempted wake-up call to fashionistas in Louis Vuitton bondage trousers. But that struck me as kind of cool, that he burned $6 million worth of memorabilia and art from the Sex Pistols.
And yeah, he made a statement there.
Yeah,
it's
a very punk statement to make. I mean,
it's a who wants to shit anyway? Sorry.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And then last but not least,
I've actually always had a major thing like trying to understand what actually punk rock is. And I've talked to a bunch of people who are punk rockers, and they've never been able to explain to me other than you play faster. It's like you increase the rate, the beat. BPM rate, so that's what it is, just faster music. That's all punk rock really is.
I guess reggae was the opposite because it slowed down the beat.
So it's really that simple. That's punk rock and that's reggae, and it's not. It's like, so it's really just this weird psychological thing. And I enjoy psychological things. I want to go.
It's a counterculture thing. I mean, it's rock and roll counterculture. Is reggae is
everything
soul.
Is counterculture. Yeah, when it comes down to.
But then it's modified and made part of culture, and then millions and millions of dollars are made off of it, and then it's culture.
But I want to talk to the people that think that they understand that that's who they are, that's who they've become. Because I know punk rocker is the guy. So you're a punk rocker. What does that mean? What is what music is actually punk rock? Is like,
should we Google?
Well, it's weird when you start to Google and you look at the stuff. It's like, so this song is punk rock, but because that band played it, or is it the beats per minute? And then when it really comes down to it, it just has to do with the psychology of the person that follows it. And in a sense, that's the same thing as being a hippie, and that's the same thing as being a Mets fan or a Dodgers fan. Sorry, I collapsed.
Or a Trump fan.
Oh, let's keep going.
All right, so now we're going to read some, we're going to share an article that's really current. This is, I thought it was important because there is something he contributed. Remembering George Michael's contributions to visual art. This is from December 27th, 2016. ArtNet News, Sarah Cascone. The pop star was a big fan of YBAs. So YBA means Young British Artist. So singer George Michael, one half of 1980s pop sensation Wham, the duo behind the 1984 hit Last Christmas, died on December 25th at age 53. The The cause of his death is as yet unknown. It's yet another major celebrity death in a year full of them, with the world mourning the loss of musical greats such as Prince, Sharon Jones, Leonard Cohen, and David Bowie. In addition to his pop career, Michael was a major art collector.
Lou Reed.
Particularly with his former partner, Kenny Goss, a Texan art dealer. The couple, whose 13-year relationship dissolved in 2009, founded Dallas's Goss-Michael Foundation in 2007, showcasing their extensive collection of contemporary British art. Since the breakup, Goss has been responsible for running the organization, but the two remained on good terms. Featured in the private museum's permanent collection are such big artists such as artists such as Tracy Emin, Damien Hirst, Sarah Lucas, Mark Quinn, and Michael Craig Martin. The foundation is also involved in philanthropy, a major part of Michael's life, often hosting the annual MTV Redefine Art Auction to benefit the MTV Staying Alive Foundation and its work to promote AIDS awareness, education, and prevention. I'm heartbroken with the news that my dear friend and longtime love, George Michael, has passed, Goss told U.S. Weekly. He was a major part of my life, and I loved him very, very much. He was an extremely kind and generous man. The beautiful memories and music he brought to the world will always be an important part of my life and those who loved and admired him. The former couple has been credited with helping elevate the Dallas art scene, and the foundation is a major draw during the annual Dallas Art Fair. When we started, Goss told Artnet News in 2014, there were a couple of Damians in the whole community, and now there's a ton of them, referring to Damien Hirst. Quote, it's a truly extraordinary addition to the community, Jeremy Strick, director of the Nasher Sculpture Center, told DallasFortWorth.com. Excuse me. To have a comprehensive collection of contemporary British artists who are extremely well known would be a feather in the cap of any major city. One of the great pleasures in coming to Dallas was to see the ambition they have, unquote. In the days following Michael's unexpected death, a makeshift shrine to the singer full of tributes left by fans has sprung up outside his Oxfordshire home in Goring, England. So that I just want to share because I had the pleasure of meeting Kenny Goss, and he's a really nice guy here in L.A., and he is doing good stuff with that foundation, Michael Goss Foundation, and so it's really good stuff, and I'm sorry for him and what he's doing. So yeah, and they're doing good things. So now,
amen
to that. He was a pop star, right? He was a pop star
a long time ago,
right?
I mean, they used to make fun of him for being a pop star, but pretty talented musician.
Yeah, I think he had an iconic voice. I mean, you know it's him when he's singing, don't you? When you hear his music, you always know it's...
Well, he's just doing black really well.
Yeah.
Always did. I mean, right there on the cusp. Yeah. I mean, I would sing, but...
He came up in the 80s, didn't he? That's pure 80s. Yeah.
Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Go Girl. Not sure which one.
So now we're going to get to some other fun stuff that I think is interesting. I have an article here that I haven't read. It's called God is a Question, Not an Answer.
Wow. Well, let's just delve right into what you haven't read about God. Let's go.
Not sure we're ready for that one, though.
Oh, so, all right.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting article.
It's like one of those interesting Christmas Carol Christmas movies and then passing it right by.
The guy who wrote this is an op-ed in the New York Times. William Irwin is a professor of philosophy at King's College, the author of, quote, The Free Market Existentialist, Capitalism Without Consumerism, and the general editor of the Blackwell Philosophy and Pop Culture series.
All right.
Religious belief without doubt should not be a badge of honor. God is a question, not an answer. Near the end of Albert Camus' existential novel, The Stranger, Mere Salt, the protagonist, is visited by a priest who offers him comfort in the face of his impending execution. Mere Salt, who has not cared about anything up to this point, wants none of it. He is an atheist in a foxhole. He certainly has not been a strident atheist, but he claims to have no time for the priest and his talk of God. For him, God is not the answer. Some 70 years later, Kamel Daoud, in his 2013, that's spelled D-A-O-U-D, in his 2013 novel, The Meersault Investigation, picks up the thread of Camus' story. In one scene late in that novel, an imam hounds Haroun, the brother of the unnamed Arab who was killed in The Stranger. In response, Haroun gives a litany of his own impieties, culminating in the declaration that, quote, God is a question, not an answer, unquote. Haroun's declaration resonates with me as a teacher and student of philosophy. The question is permanent, answers are temporary. I live in the question. Any honest atheist must admit that he has his doubts, that occasionally he thinks he might be wrong, that there could be a God after all, if not the God of the Judeo-Christian tradition, then a God of some kind. Nathaniel Hawthorne said of Herman Melville, quote, he can neither believe nor can nor be comfortable in his unbelief. And if he is too honest and courageous not to try to do one or the other. Dwelling in a state of doubt, uncertainty and openness about the existence of God marks an honest approach to the question. There is no easy answer. Indeed, the question may be fundamentally unanswerable. Still, there are potentially unpleasant consequences that can arise from decisions or conclusions, and one must take responsibility for them. Anyone who does not occasionally worry that he may be a fraud almost certainly is. Nor does the worry absolve one from the charge. One may still be a fraud, just one who rightly worries about it on occasion. Likewise, anyone who does not occasionally worry that she is wrong about the existence or non-existence of God most likely has a fraudulent belief. Worry can make the belief or unbelief genuine, but it cannot make it correct. People who claim certainty about God worry me, both those who believe and those who don't believe. They do not really listen to the other side of conversations, and they are too ready to impose their views on others. It is impossible to be certain about God. Bertrand Russell was once asked what he would say to God if it turned out that there was one and he met him at judgment. Russell's reply, "You gave us insufficient evidence." Even believers can appreciate Russell's response. God does not make it easy. God, if he exists, is deus absconditus, the hidden God. Does not show himself unambiguously to all people, and people disagree about his existence. We should all feel and express humility in the face of the question, even if we think the odds are tilted heavily in favor of a particular answer. Indeed, the open-minded search for truth can unite believers and non-believers. In a previous essay, in The Stone, Gary Gutting reconceived Pascal's wager. Rather than consider it as a bet on whether God exists, which has tremendous consequences on one side and relatively trivial consequences on the other, we should consider it as a bet on whether to embrace a, quote, doubt of indifference, unquote, or a, quote, doubt of desire, unquote. A doubt of indifference is simply a matter of not caring, and it has no clear benefits. By contrast, doubt of desire approaches the question with the hope that a higher power could be found that would provide greater meaning and value to human existence. As Mr. Gutting sees it, the choice is obvious. Of course, non-believers will object that there are various secular alternatives for finding meaning and value in life. Additionally, there is an assumption built into Pascal's wager that we are talking about the God of the Judeo-Christian tradition. Non-believers may see no reason to favor that particular deity. So Mr. Gutting's, quote, doubt of desire, unquote, needs to be more explicitly conceived as an openness to the question in which the non-believer explores what various religious traditions have to offer. A non-believer might embrace the ethical teachings of Christianity, the yogic practices of Hinduism, the meditative techniques of Zen Buddhism, or any of the vast array of teachings and practices that the world's religions have to offer. Such embrace may lead the non-believer to belief in God, or it may not. This proposal should be taken in the other direction as well. There should be no dogmatic belief. The believer should concede that she does not know with certainty that God exists. There is no faith without doubt. The Trappist monk Thomas Merton wrote that faith, quote, is a decision, a judgment that is fully and deliberately taken in the light of a truth that cannot be proven. It is not merely the acceptance of a decision that has been made by somebody else, unquote. Indeed, belief without doubt would not be required by an all-loving God, and it should not be worn as a badge of honor. As non-believers should have a doubt of desire, so too believers should have a faith infected by doubt. Such doubt can enliven belief by putting it at risk and compelling it to renew itself, taking it from the mundane to the transcendent, as when a Christian takes the leap of faith to believe in the resurrection. We can all exist along a continuum of doubt. Some of us will approach religious certainty at one extreme, and others will approach aesthetic, atheistic certainty at the other extreme. Many of us will slide back and forth over time. What is important is the common ground of the question, not an answer. Surely we can respect anyone who approaches the question honestly and with an open mind. Ecumenical and interfaith religious dialogue has increased substantially in our age. We can and should expand that dialogue to include atheists and agnostics, to recognize our common humanity, and to stop seeing one another as enemy combatants in a spiritual or intellectual war. Rather than seeking the security of an answer, perhaps we should collectively celebrate the uncertainty of the question. This is not to say that we should cease attempts to convince others of our views. Far from it. We should try to unsettle others as we remain open to being unsettled ourselves. In a spirit of tolerance and intellectual humility, we should see ourselves as partners in a continuing conversation addressing an enduring question.
Well said.
I thought that was really good, so I wanted to share that.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Well, thank you. Let's play some music, dude. Let's lighten the mood just a tiny bit. We went to some art news. We talked about George Michael, and then we talked about the question and not the answer. So we're going to play. This is from the last album from a tribe called Quest. Brand new album. We got it from here is the name of the album. And the song we're playing is The Space Program.
I want to deal with a bigger insult, man. The heat. It's coming down hard. We got to get our shit together.
It's time to go left and not right. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters, for mothers and fathers and dead niggas, for non-conformists, one-hitter quitters, for Tyson types and shade figures. Let's get it together, come on, let's make it.
Gotta make it,
to make it,
to make it,
to make it,
to make something happen,
to make something happen,
to make something happen,
let's make something happen.
Word to Viper, gonna bring it to the overlord. Drake and Cisco, chilling with the gold microphone cords, and we grip our balls every time we stuntin' on tour, cause we never bore, responding to the ready crowds roar, and promoters try to hit us with the audible. We about our business, we not quitters, not bullshitters, we deliver, we go getters, don't be bitter, cause we not just niggas.
Jerobe, my fiber woven to different cloth, ain't nothing forbidden, the segregators written off, hard to spit in the city, y'all niggas spitting, getting so confused.
trees in the maze. You could lose your brain, missing lust and planning for our future people. None of our people involved. Boring, handy, and smearing off. The kid and cracking off. Cracking off and smearing off. Could quickly turn a Molotov. Molotov the spaceship door before that bitch is taking off. And always seems the poorest persons, the people forsaken. Dog, the Washingtons, Jeffersons, Jacksons on the captain's log. They'd rather leave us to the grave. Water poison, deli smog. Glass unblackening, it's happening. You feel it, y'all. I'd rather see weaning three by three structure with many bars. Leave us where we are so they can play among the stars. We taking off to Mars. Got the space vessels overflowing. What you think they want us there? All this niggas not going.
My reputation ain't glowing. Reparations ain't flowing. If you find yourself stuck in the creek, you better start rowing. Used to see the TV screen as a place I land my dream in the car stereo. Where they would promote the show. Optimistic little brother with a little hope. You know,
space program for niggas. Where you stuck here, nigga? It ain't a space program for niggas. Where you stuck here, nigga? It ain't a space program for niggas. Where you stuck here, nigga? Man, it's space program for niggas. Stop, stop, stop.
Wonder sometimes I read the paper every day. All these happenings are secular, just happen different ways. And the president's refining her wings, she's confined with about 30 Percocets and 5 bottles of wine. Carolina, nothing finer than a black woman who climbs to the top of the state building, claiming that their flag is mine. Now people on top of people feels like we can't breathe. Put so much in this motherfucker, feel like we should leave. Put it on TV, put it in movies, put it in our face. These notions and ideas of citizens live in this space. I chuckle just like all of y'all. Absurdity, after all, takes money to get it running and money from trees don't fall. Imagine for 1 second all my people look color, please. Imagine for 1 second all the people in poverty, no matter the skin tone, culture or time zone. Think the ones who got it would even think to throw you a bone. Moved you out your neighborhood, did they find you a home? Not safe, probably no place to. Imagine if the shit was really talk about space, dude. Imagine if the shit was really talk about space, dude. Imagine if the shit was really talk about space.
Time to go left and not right. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters, for mothers and fathers and dead niggas, for non-conformers when hit or quitters, for Tyson types and Che figures. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters, for mothers and fathers and dead niggas, for non-conformers when hit or quitters, for Tyson types and Che figures. Make, make, make. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and fathers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one hit or quitters. For types and chain figures. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and fathers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one hit acquaintance. For types and trade figures. Make, make, make. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and fathers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one hit acquaintance. For types and trade figures. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and fathers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one hit or quitters. For types and chain figures. Make, make, make. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen.
Here, a small step for mankind, but a giant step for us.
Oompa, loompa, doopity, doopa. I've got another puzzle for you.
Mind the Gap is back. A small step for mankind and a giant step for us.
A little bit of Gene Wilder there.
And that was, again, the Space Program, a song on the new album by A Tribe Called Quest. Yes. We're gonna talk a bit more. I mean, mind the gap. This is an article called "Relation Tips That Resonated" by Daniel Jones. This is from the New York Times, December 18th. So here it is. Modern love is not an advice column, but the stories frequently offer lessons in how to navigate relationships. After all, our most popular essay ever, "To Fall in Love with Anyone, Do This," quote-unquote, taught readers how they could increase their chances of falling in love by asking 36 questions of a stranger, which we've discussed during the year. I shared all of those questions and we talked about it. And then our second most popular, "What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage," quote unquote, explained how to improve a spouse's behavior by using exotic animal training techniques. This year's most read essays also offer strategies for improving romantic and platonic relationships, such as fighting well in marriage and minimizing the physical pain of a broken heart. And so here are a few sage pieces of advice.
I'm ready.
Okay, you ready? All right, number one, skip small talk.
Yes.
In getting to know someone, don't waste too many words or precious hours of your life asking dull questions about commuting times or the weather. As Tim Boomer suggests, dive deep from the start with big questions such as, what work are you most passionate about? Oh, please. And what's the most in love you've ever felt?
Wow.
Two. That don't be afraid to fight in your marriage or to fight for it.
Yes.
Too much fighting can lead to divorce, but it turns out too little fighting can also split you up. Laura Pritchett and her husband thought love was all about peace and harmony, so they tried to avoid conflict entirely. Quote, "But that kind of love often doesn't survive life," she realized, "and in the end, our silence was less about respect or affection or love than it was about cowardice," unquote. You okay, dude?
I'm here.
All right. Three.
Three.
Let people know the real you. Make sure they really do know before it's too late. James Pena was in his 60s before he came out as gay to his mother. He had always avoided the subject, assuming his parents had figured it out during his decades of visits with his boyfriend. They hadn't. Quote, "We never knew," his elderly mother told him one week before she died. "How did this happen?" Unquote. Number four, know this, sex is not love.
Correct.
And love does not require sex.
Correct.
Effie Stempler, who is gay, has been in a platonic relationship with a woman for 17 years. They even joked about marrying each other if neither found a husband by age 40. 41, they moved in together, leaving Effie to wonder if what they have is, quote, "maybe the closest approximation of real love either of us will ever experience," unquote. You okay? You need some water, dude?
Keep going.
All right. Number five, get married and stay married out of want, not need. Who needs men? Who needs marriage? After divorcing twice, Karen Rinaldi found herself questioning the whole concept of need in a relationship, resolving never to marry again. Then she married again, a union that has lasted for 20-plus years. Quote, "I don't need him," she said, "but I want him in my life. He doesn't protect me from others, only from my worst instincts."
Yes.
Six. If a man uses his sandwich from his online dating headshot, steer clear. Did you hear that?
Sandwich.
Yeah. Even if the sandwich looks mouth-wateringly delicious, even if that sandwich makes witty bread puns and asks you to be his bagel.
With
yeah.
A G.
Yeah, right. B-A-Y-G-A-L, his bagel. Also, avoid a man who wears clip-in bike shoes to your first date, making him sound like a horse as he clippity-clops across the restaurant's wood floor. Seven, Try treating heartache as you would a headache. When the neuroscience student Melissa Hill was dumped, she knew that chemicals in her brain were making her feel as if she were suffering through withdrawal from drug addiction. That is when she discovered research suggesting that just headache tablets can help ease the physical pain of heartbreak. But regardless of how horrible you feel, be sure to follow dosage guidelines. The risks of ibuprofen overdose are real. Can Tylenol help heal a broken heart? 8, say what you want from the relationship. If someone has put you in the friend zone and you want the relationship to be more, don't assume the person will magically figure out your feelings. In an age where many people are content to relationships remain undefined for months or even years, it's up to you to define them. So be brave and say what you want. Yes. True, you may lose the friendship or whatever it was by doing so, but emotional clarity can be its own reward.
Yes.
Number nine. When sharing cabs with strange men, keep your shoes on.
Absolutely.
An offer of an innocent-sounding foot massage could lead, as Julie Ann Miller discovered, to him asking for permission to suck your toes. Then again, if you believe, as Julia did, in nurturing people's dreams, no matter how small or odd, saying yes is also an option.
Suck those toes.
Yeah, it's kind of a droll little article to take us away from the heavier one that we read before.
Let's get lighter. Whatever you got.
Whatever I got. Well, you're drinking wine and choking and coughing, so let me read this
one. Well, I'm still alive.
Yeah, well, there is a heartbeat. I hear you. You're speaking.
This year.
Fine wine fracas.
Let's go.
I dined out with two friends who earn much more than I do. As one perused the wine list, I asked him to choose a bottle under $100. It's more than I spend, but it felt like a compromise. He ignored my request and ordered a very expensive bottle. And then another. I didn't enjoy the meal. I was too nervous about paying my share. When the bill came, my other friends said they would treat me. I was relieved but embarrassed. I didn't drink. I could probably back out of the booze portion of the bill, but I want to drink, just not the most expensive thing on the menu. Thoughts? J.S., Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Philip Galanz responds with, quote, "When I was young," said Oscar Wilde, supposedly along with many other snappy lines, that is not attributed to either he, Dorothy Parker, or Charles Nelson Reilly, quote, "I thought that money was the most important thing in life." Can you see where this is headed? But now that I am old, I know that it is. But money isn't nearly as important as the things it represents. Power, generosity. Did I say power? It's possible that your big spender pals always intended to treat you. But you'd think one of them might have said the wine's on us or on me before overruling your $100 limit. Or they may be the kind of people who like to lord their wealth over others. Still, good for you for speaking up. Don't be cowed into silence by richer folk. No need to be embarrassed by our finances. We work hard and our budgets are what they are. Next time, have a chat with known offenders before your meal. I'm on a budget and would like you to respect it. And should any friend start grandstanding at the table, simply tell the waiter that you need another minute before ordering and lay out your reasonable request again. Nobody puts baby in a corner. Also, a Tanqueray martini with olives, typically 12 to 18, can be a nice alternative to wine.
12 to 18?
Well, depending on where you are. What's the Tanqueray?
So is the $12 to $18?
Yes, $12 to $18. Yeah. So, any thoughts on that? Or just the sort of the expensive wine?
I've been in that position myself. It's just like...
Well, that's why we all have. That's why I'm reading it.
I mean, it's just like... I'm don't drink wine.
Yeah, just pass.
Completely pass. Just like it's...
Well, order your separate drink. Say, I'd like a separate check. This is my meals on my check.
Well, I think it's bigger than that. I think there's a class distinction when it comes to eating out in public. And there's people that can afford to do it, and there's people that can't. And if you go out with people that can and you can't, it's intolerable. You can't. You just.
I don't do it. I was recently invited out.
I don't have that $100 that you think, it's $100, that's why I make so much money. I think, I'll see you later.
Well, I recently had that happen. I passed.
Recently? I've had it happen for the last 40 years.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, just the other day.
Yes, me too, as well.
Here's a baseball. It's a baseball comment for you. Striking out socially, the title of this.
Striking out socially. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, my husband and I went to a baseball game. We ended up with 2 extra tickets.
Nice.
So we sat in the middle of our 4 seats, happy not to have others next to us. Behind us, a man put his feet on the empty seat next to me, for which I had the ticket. This bothered me, but I didn't say anything. Later, he adjusted his foot and almost kicked me in the head. I turned around and said, "Are you kidding me?" To which the man's girlfriend replied, "Just relax." He left his foot where it was and began making loud noises that further diminished my enjoyment of the game. My husband thinks I should have said nothing, but I believe I was right to speak up. What would you have done, Kathy? New York. Color me thunderstruck that anyone seems to know less about baseball than I do. But I believe the loud noises emanated from the man are called cheering, which people do in sports arenas. But also point out that context is king. If he had put his Saint Laurent loafers on the seat beside you at the Metropolitan Opera, it would have been an offense for which an usher might be summoned. But at Shea Stadium or wherever, whatever they call the new one, where beer is sloshing around the stands and any man on the field seems to spit more than all the men I've ever known in my life combined, I would take a different tact. You were right, but rather than defaulting to angry sarcasm, try bonding. Do you promise not to kick me in the head? Then hope for the best.
Yeah, I think it's a little worse on the fact that there's the extra seat and they feel like they own that seat. That's really what the thing is like the guy's not disrespecting you, just that you have the extra seat and now he's putting his foot on that seat and you own that seat. That's the different thing that's going on there.
Maybe they should have invited or scalped the tickets and then people would have sat there and their feet wouldn't have been there.
There's a lot of stuff going on there. I mean, all these things. That's why we love this stuff. Keep going.
Let's see.
If you have any more.
I have a ton. Here's one that's really new. My husband and I went to a Hanukkah party.
Hanukkah.
Which this year was the Christmas Eve, and Hanukkah is over Christmas, so it's a...
It's about time.
So this is called... let me read the title of this letter. It's called Silence After a Taunt. My husband and I went to a Hanukkah party where I witnessed the host's son, about 12, tease a younger girl whose mother is Latina. Quote, "Pack your bags," he said. "Trump is going to send you back to Mexico," unquote.
Ooh.
The girl told her mother, who confronted the hosts. The boy denied it, and it was left as a misunderstanding. I didn't report what I had heard. It felt like bad manners to elevate a children's fight to the center of the party. My mother always said there's a time and place for everything, but my husband was horrified when I told him later, "You? Anonymous. Make mine a double shot of horrified, with a splash of disbelief at the misreading of your mother's maxim. There is never a time and place for cruelty. By staying silent, you rob the little girl of the acknowledgement and the apology to which she was entitled. And you deprive the boy of learning the consequences of nasty behavior. He may not understand how mean he was, but your inaction ensured that his ignorance persists. Don't want to sound like harpy. It's to your credit that the episode still bothers you. But in a year in which tens of millions of our fellow citizens were willing to overlook what many consider the racist, misogynistic, and populist sentiments of our president-elect in favor of taking a flyer on improving their own rough economic circumstances, we'll all have a bigger responsibility to intervene. This includes stepping up on behalf of those whose economic circumstances are being belittled. And you were the adult on the scene. Please call the parents of the girl and boy and report what you heard. Even belatedly, it is important that the girl knows her reasonable complaints will be heard and that the boy understands that threatening the vulnerable is cruel. If I sound strident, forgive me. Many of us will need to learn how to recalibrate the language of objection, even in service of kindness, if we stand any chance of reaching each other.
Wow.
Yeah, he has a way of hitting it, don't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I especially like that remark about the overlooking these aspects of the current leader that we're about to swear wow. in 20 days. Okay, holiday malaise.
Malaise.
I am 22. Every year around Christmas, I start feeling bummed. So I binge watch cheesy Christmas movies on the Hallmark Channel. I get that they're idealized and fake. But honestly, I'd like some of that Christmas spirit too. Instead, I get my slightly dysfunctional family and a crummy office holiday party. Any suggestions, or should I just hide until New Year's? Emma, Maine.
Yes.
Get in line, Emma. We all feel that way. Probably even Candace Cameron Burr, la diva assoluta of the Hallmark Channel Cheese Factory. Most of us have been steeped in Christmas fantasies since birth. Do things that help me, and one thing that doesn't. Do aerobic exercise on a treadmill or your mean streets of Maine to up-tempo music. Get your heart beating and sing along. It can lift my mood for hours. Also, weirdly helpful, reading to children. There is healing magic in their rapt attention. Find Rugrats at your siblings' homes or possibly the children's room at your local library. Not helpful. Buying things. Merch never has the transmogrifying power. I hope it will once I get it home. And lay off the Hallmark Channel. The absence of gay best friend and snappy Jewish neighbor makes fun romantic comedy practically impossible to pull off.
Amen.
Amen. Let's see.
More. They're clamoring for more.
This is a whole one about weight.
We just can't wait.
Okay. For 15 years, a friend invited me. Okay, it was Lost in the Mail is the title of this. For 15 years, a friend invited me to his large Christmas party. The invitations came by email. While I have great affection for him, we do not socialize, or speak outside of this party. I have not been good about thanking him, and I don't give parties, so I never reciprocate. A mutual friend tells me the party is happening soon. I believe that I was left off the guest list by mistake. Is there anything I can do? I would find it awkward to ask him directly, GG. Why are you forcing me to be mean today? This is the holidays. Christmas is here. After 15 years of unreciprocated hospitality, slurping down your friend's booze and gorging on his heavy hors d'oeuvres, without so much as a thank you text, this day had to come. I won't authorize crashing the party, and under the circumstances, I don't think you should ask mutual friends to intervene. Be honest. Will you miss your pal or his party? Satisfying reciprocation doesn't have to be tit for tat. You don't have to give a grand dinner party dance to pay him back. Any sign of friendship or appreciation will do. Early next year, call and invite him to coffee or lunch, or even for a catch-up chat. If that's too much, you don't belong at his party anyway.
Wow. Laying down the science, man.
A gift in the hand.
Two in the bush.
Around the holidays, I like to have some gifts on hand in case friends or neighbors drop by unexpectedly with gifts for us. My wife thinks this is cold. You, JP, I think you're a genius. If your wife can pull off simple gratitude for a surprise gift without panicking, more power to her. I have a harder time with that, and your idea would work like a charm. I suggest the, quote, God's Love We Deliver cookbook, unquote, filled with stories and recipes about the healing power of food. Every penny goes to making and delivering food for homebound people who are ill and their caretakers.
Wow.
Better left unsaid.
Yes.
My oldest friend died suddenly last month. I will see his longtime wife when I go home for the holidays. I'm having a hard time with this loss, especially as I remember how sharply his wife spoke to him, often with a nasty tone. I should have stuck up for him when he was alive, but I didn't. Can I say something now? Anonymous. I am sorry for your loss. I'm also sorry for your friend's wife's loss. And I am praying to the elf on the shelf that you will keep quiet about your grievance. You have both lost someone dear to you. But as anyone in a long-term relationship knows, perhaps even you, harsh words are not uncommon. Even if it constituted verbal abuse, it is over now, and everyone's wounds are too fresh for productive conversation. Be governed by Patty Griffin's humane song, Long Ride Home. Quote, 40 years go by with someone laying in your bed, 40 years of things you say you wish you'd never said. How hard would it have been to use some kinder words instead, unquote. Treat the people in your life gently in your friend's honor. He wouldn't want you sparring with his grieving widow.
Okay. All right.
All right. I mean, should we wrap it up? Do you want to talk about more stuff? Or?
Well, you got one more?
Yeah, I got 100 here.
Well, I mean, we have.
Oh, here's the fat one. Here's the fat one. Yeah, but let's do this one. Gift? What gift? I was a host to a longtime friend at my house in the Hamptons. He visits every year on the weekend of a certain benefit gala to which he treats me and our girlfriends. This year, he and his date forgot to pick up their gift bags, separate ones for men and women, on their way out of the party. Later, he asked me whether I could spare a gift bag. Feeling under pressure because he bought the tickets, I agreed. My girlfriend was livid with me on learning of her bag's disappearance. May I call my friend and ask for it back? Mark, New York. Funny how you offered up your girlfriend's gift bag instead of your own, no? Do not ask for its return. That would be petty. And the hair and skin products, which are de rigueur in such bags, may be half used by now. Instead, make a sincere apology to your girlfriend and deliver it with a bouquet of Dutch blue hydrangeas. Next time, limit surrender of property, whether guilt-induced or otherwise, to that which is yours.
Wow, just hammer right to the point there.
Yeah, no, he goes for it, and I like that. So on that, we're going to play another song from this new album, Tribe Called Quest.
Yes.
Called We Got It From Here, and this is called The Donald, and we leave you with this. Happy January 2017 to all of our listeners and to everyone in our lives. We send love to you.
It's a great new year. We have a lot of hope. Let's maintain.
Yo. 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 Five dog, what a guan with the crow. Enough thing, that's what me had to come through. Five dog, you spit wicked every verse. Them no say, respect the training man first. Five dog, I know you have them all shook up. Good shit, cause you a mastermind they cook up. Five dog, what a guan with the crow. Enough thing, that's what me had to come through. Five dog, you spit wicked every verse. Them no say, respect training man first. Five dog, I know you honor one and twos. Give me that one where we damn, that's the one pull up. I'm like, listen. Five dog, I know you wanna one and twos. Give me a zoo zoo and do exactly what you do. Tribe Called Quest, you see them back with one another. Hey, your boss or boss, they don't want no problem.
Five dog, Donald. Five dog, Donald. Donald. Five dog, legend. Donald. 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 Fight dog legend, you can call me Don Juice. I'm the shit right now. What you need to see proof? Recently on the internet, they chatting, taking proof, debating who can win in battle rapping. Let's make it happen. These cyber thugs already part. No subliminals with me. You know who the fuck you are. Who wants bar? Ha ha. Well, here are orthodox spitter or ring on a southpaw. No doubt I'ma set it. Dudes best be ready off top on the spot. No reading from your whack. Very leave the iPhones home. Skill sets must be shown. I'ma show you the real meaning of the danger zone. I got it so on. Ace trick to all clones. Untouchable in my zone. Watch it, don't leave him alone. Fuck your ass, cheek flows with bars sweeter than scones. Put on microphone.
Yes, he's the wrong one to fuck with no matter what the day. He could catch you on his plane or the one he on today. Visit niggas in a dream, make a scream of bloody murder. He's a trainee gladiator, ain't no need to take it further. If you wanna take it further, your Huckleberry is here. Doctor of your holiday, Wyatt Earp, you're good like the tears. We gon' celebrate him, elevate him. Father had to levitate him, give him his and don't debate him. Top dog is the way to rate him.
Step up, them no want no problem, brother.
Five dog.